From the WisconsinVegetableGardener.com, this is the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Podcast coming up on the program.
We're going to talk about some common problems that you may have while canning.
Mike Novak with his environmental report, your questions, our answers.
And the well-known man from Growing a Greener World, Joe Lample, with some great information on gardening and chickens.
All that and more coming up right now on the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Podcast.
The Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Podcast is permeating into your ears with your host, Joey Baird.
And it could be the weeds. Some gardeners try to get all the weeds out of their garden. Other gardeners leave them in their garden. It's really a decision that you need to make. There's benefits to both sides of that. It's just something that you need to figure out what you want to do for your garden.
And Holly Baird.
Canning is a science. When you're canning, you want to make sure you follow the directions, follow the recipe, don't cut corners, don't replace things. It's crucial to you, your health, and your family.
They're professional gardeners with full-time jobs, and they're on the air now.
Welcome to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Podcast. I am Joy Baird. Beside me is my wife, co-host, best friend, and gardening partner,
Holly Baird.
Behind the TWVG microphone here at the WI Garden Media Studios in Southeast Wisconsin, the information you're going to hear is important and vital to the life and success of your garden. You just may have to tweak some of the dates and times you applied for in your particular growing area. If you're tuning in for the very first time, we appreciate it. If you've tuned in just because of the guest or the topic that you've seen, welcome. And you can check out all previous podcasts on our website at thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com underneath the podcast tab at the top of the page. You can see all previous episodes, our guests, and topics for you to download for free and share with friends. If you've tuned in for every episode, we appreciate that and we appreciate your support. And if you're tuning in for the very first time, we appreciate that. We appreciate the download, the share, the mention to your friends, your fellow garden friends on social media about what we do here. And if you're not sure what we do and you just stumbled upon us, well, Holly's going to tell you a little bit about what we do, and then we're going to get into the problems that we may face preserving the food that we grow.
Sure. So on our website at thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com, we have over 700 videos on how to grow food, what to do with the food you grow.
What not to do, what mistakes that we've made.
Right. Troubleshooting, canning, freezing, preserving, all that good stuff. Do it yourself, reusing items, all great videos. Then we also have our quarterly digital magazine. It's a free online magazine. It's full color, high definition, and you can download it, you can print it out, you can put it on your e-reading device, whatever you feel comfortable with. And that's available there, too. That's free. And we always strive to have some great interviews in that magazine as well. And then we have this program.
Yep, and you can check out all of that on the website, thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com. Well, Holly, I'm going to let you kind of take the reins on this topic because you are a multi-time award-winning canner from the Wisconsin State Fair, as well as you've taken a handful, I don't know if multiple would be the term, multiple canning classes. I learned most of that, most of the canning that I know growing up. You've went through some of the classes and understand the science of the whole procedure. So we're going to talk about problems that many people face each year when it comes to canning. And it may not be necessarily their mistake, but more of maybe uneducated or unaware of what they're doing.
Or not prepared.
That inevitably puts them in the position of the problems that we're going to talk about. So let's talk about the first one that many people fear is the jar breaking during the processing of the food, whether water bath or even pressure canning. What is some of the main reasons why this may occur, and how can we prevent it or at least reduce the risk of it happening to us again?
So when your jar breaks, it could be, I know when we did it, when our jar broke, it was because we were putting room temperature jars and tomatoes.
We broke more than just one, but the general,
Okay, so it was room temperature. So that was our fault. We were putting into boiling water, and it was contained in its little jar, and it caused probably like a mini explosion, and then it popped. So basically, you want to make sure that you're putting hot food into hot jars, and that will help prevent jars from breaking.
Right. We make it a practice to take our... We used to we used to take the jars and put them in the water bath canner prior to pulling them out, filling them with the produce, and then putting back in the water bath canner. A lot of in and out, a lot of things can happen, the water splashes. What we've done now is we've made it a habit to, as we're getting prepared, to turn the oven on its lowest temperature, which our oven's 170 degrees Fahrenheit, and set the jars in there. We've used hot soapy water, we've sanitized them and cleaned them in the sink, then we put them in the oven and let them warm up to that temperature. That way, the transition from the jar to the water bath canner or the jar to the pressure canner, which the water inside both of those are at an elevated rate, that the transition is very minimal.
Now, if you do this with the oven, make sure that when you're all done canning for that day, if you have any extra jars in your oven, you pull them out.
Or remember to turn the oven off.
Well, that too, but you could all of a sudden decide that you're going to cook something later or bake something later, and all of a sudden you're at 425 degrees, and I don't think it's good for that glass. I think it might break.
Well, also, the other problem we had whenever we broke a jar was we had warm jars, mm-hmm. and we had cold lemon juice pouring into it and just blew the bottoms out of them before we even got the product into the jar. It just basically like you took a hammer and hit the bottom of the jar, and it just exploded. And we did that twice before I really realized what was going on.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what's our next?
So the next problem is lack of liquid in the jar. You process your jar, water bath, or pressure can, and at the time of putting it in the device, you had maximum liquid in the jar. When you pulled it out, it was like half the liquid had disappeared. Why is that, and how can we prevent that?
I'm not really sure exactly why it happens, but it does happen. And it's okay. You can use whatever is in that jar.
As long as it seals, it's not a terrible thing, right?
Right. So you can still use that, whatever it is, if it's tomatoes or something, you can still use those. But I don't know if there's a way to prevent it exactly. I guess you would want to, if you put a lot of food into one jar and you don't allow for air bubbles, then you could lose it that way. It has too many air bubbles and you could have lost it through that.
But as long as the jar, you pull it out, half the liquid's disappeared, half the produce that's in the jar is above the liquid that's in the jar, as long as it's sealed, we're okay.
Yeah.
Assuming that you did the prior canning procedure correctly.
Right. You have to make sure you do step by steps.
Right, and not skip a step to try to rush and speed through that. Okay, here's one that I think everybody who's canned one or a million jars have had, is the jar doesn't seal. You've gone through the procedure, the process, pressure canning, water bath canning, and the jar doesn't seal. So what is that, and why is that happen?
It's frustrating, that's for sure. So you get a jar lid that doesn't seal and all the rest of them sealed, and you're like, can I redo this? Can I eat it? What do I need to do? So first of all, you want to remain calm, and then you want to check, when you're putting your produce or your sauces or whatever into the jar before they put in the canner, sometimes they'll have like a tiny dent in the rim and you didn't notice it. So,
run your finger around the rim.
Yeah, run your finger on the rim. Or when you're filling the jars, you want to make sure you take a paper towel, run it on the rim, around the rim too, just so there's not extra food or anything like that. And then also, maybe you didn't finger tighten your lids enough and you allowed some water to kind of pass through the jar, that can be a problem too. So you don't want to crank on your rings before you put them in, but you want to give them a nice finger point squeeze.
Now, what I've noticed is whenever we process it, after we pull the jars out, water bath or pressure can, the rings are loose. So we go ahead and kind of retighten them slightly just so there's contact between the rubber gasket and the glass ring on the jar, and that seems to make a tremendous difference in the sealing as the jar cools. Is that still a safe practice to do, to kind of retighten that ring on the jar after being pulled out of the water bath canner, just to make sure you have the best possible chance of getting the seal to occur?
So I'm just going to tell you that you can do whatever you want. You can stay by the book and just set them on the towel or whatever and walk away, or you can help the seals not break but pop. Whatever you're comfortable with is fine.
Okay, so the next problem that people are going to face is my jar is half full of produce. I started with peaches, pears, tomatoes, fill in the blank. The jar was full whenever I put it in the canner, water bath or pressure, and after I pulled it out, it's like half liquid and like a quarter or half of the produce that's in it. What happened to the produce? What went wrong there?
So what you want to do is, it's okay if there's extra. Sometimes maybe when you're packing the jars, you didn't pack them as tight as you thought. We did that our first year doing peaches. We thought we had it pretty tight, and then all of a sudden we have half the water on the bottom. So you want to...
The only disappointing part about that is you've wasted half of a canning jar.
Yeah.
If you're limited on canning jars and space, that's a real disappointment. But if you're, you know, if you've got enough, you know, it makes no sense to go and re-pop that seal and put it in a new jar and reprocess it again. Leave it the way it is.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, any other things that we have missed that maybe we should be covering here when it comes to the... Well, let's go back to the chips in the top of the glass of the jar. Number one, when we store the jars and the produce is in the jars, we take the rings off. And we've covered this on the program, but real quickly, refresh why that is recommended and not just like something hearsay that the internet has begun to tell us. Why do we want to take the rings off at the time of storage for all of our produce that's in our jars?
Well, for one, you can save money by not having the rings.
And we kind of didn't know that when we started buying jars because we tried to get jars and rings to match up.
Yeah.
So we got a lot of rings and we don't need that many, but at some time, some of these will rust out and we'll replace them with the other ones. But go ahead.
Okay. So if you have this problem where you, or not, it's not a problem, you want to store them with the rings on, don't do that. So what happens is that say that something in your jar causes a chemical reaction. Not necessarily your fault, who knows, whatever. If it has that reaction, it's most likely going to have the lid come off, the lid will pop off, and then your jar can do its thing. If you take the rings off, you take the chance of it exploding all over the place. And if it doesn't explode all over the place, then it might reseal the jar, which is bad because if there was bad stuff in there, then it's been resealed and it's in your... You know, in your possession, that's not good either.
Because a unsealed jar without a ring, the food goes bad, but you notice the ring, the lid has popped. That's a far cheaper price to pay than having to go to the hospital and figure out why you have some tremendously terrible disease that you got from eating bad canned goods.
Right.
Other thing, whenever we store the jars empty, in our instance, since we've got the jars that match the rings, since we've got so many pairs, we store the jars empty with the ring on it to protect that glass lid or that glass ring from chipping, because we bang the jars around, they get banged around, they're just the normal procedure of moving jars around. So we take the metal ring, put it on the jar, and it's protecting that glass lid or that glass ring, so mm-hmm. we don't ruin more jars that way. And you always want to make sure you had certified canning jars. You don't want to use old glass mustard jars or anything like that, because we found some of those in the collections that we bought in the mass grouping of canning jars we have bought at yard sales and estate sales. There's some of those mixed in there, so we pull those out for dry storage and then go ahead and use the regular ones. So with that being said, those are some answers to the problems that you may be having when it comes to preserving the food that you grow or buy locally at your local garden farmer's market. Coming up after the break, Mike Novak will be with us with his environmental report and your questions and our answers right after this.
Water is our most important resource. The key is to capture the rain that falls on your property. No need for bulky rain barrels that are hard to handle and just don't fit in. Rain Reserve has solved the problem for you. With their multi-size and color cube-like units, a rain barrel that does not look like one. Capturing rain easy, going unnoticed by passerbyers, and blending into the surrounding. Construction so easy, even children can put it together. To get your Rain Reserve, visit rainreserve.com. And use coupon code RAIN2016 to save 10% on total purchase.
What you feed your plants and soil matters. Tomatoes should be big and juicy, but not at the soil's expense. Age-old growth, bloom, kelp, and fish and seaweed, reliable fertilizers, gardens by supplying the plants and the soil with fast-acting nutrients and natural ingredients to create delicious plants and healthy soil. If you desire juicy tomatoes and healthy soil to grow them in, visit ageold.com for more information on Ageold and our suppliers.
You want your next raised beds to be easy, functional, and beautiful? The Embrace helps you create the garden you've always wanted. Finally, raised beds that everyone can assemble and enjoy. No tools needed. Just slide any lumber into the Embrace corner, fill with your favorite soil mix, and you're ready to plant. Made from 100% recycled steel right here in the USA. And a portion of every sale helps to build school and community gardens all across the country. Let the Embrace help you create your next raised bed. Grow beautifully with the Embrace. Available at local garden centers and online at artofthegarden.net.
Now back to two gardeners that understand where you're coming from.
Are you a lazy gardener? It's okay if you're a lazy gardener.
Joey and Holly Bear.
Welcome back to the program. If you'd like to find out more information about the sponsors you've just heard and our entire sponsor lineup, you can find that information at the WisconsinVegetableGardener.com underneath the podcast tab. Those links are listed there as well as all previous podcasts. Those links are also in the show notes below. Well, each program, our good friend from Q4 Radio in Chicago, Illinois, joins us on the program. Mike Novak brings us an environmental look of things that we may have should already have known prior to his appearance on the program. We appreciate the knowledge and the time that he spends bringing this content to us. And here is Mike Novak.
And now to a man who's not afraid to tell you what you need to do to keep the planet he lives on clean.
Take your food scraps out to your compost pile. Screw in a compact fluorescent light bulb. Turn on a window fan instead of an air conditioner. Low flow, baby. Shower heads and toilets. Take one napkin at Starbucks instead of six.
Mike Novak.
Welcome to another installment of the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Environmental Report. I'm Mike Novak, and you can hear me live each Sunday morning from 9 to 11 a.m. Central Time on Q4 Radio, which streams at QUENumeral4.org and on the Q4 Radio Facebook page. You can also get my podcasts at MikeNovak.net, MikeNowak.net. What do you do with an abandoned 660,000-square-foot factory that was previously owned by Pfizer for the purpose of manufacturing pharmaceuticals in Brooklyn, New York? Well, if you're part of the burgeoning world of indoor food-growing operations, you take advantage of the space to expand your operations to unprecedented levels using unexpected resources. According to a story in Take Part, the digital news and lifestyle magazine, a company called Square Roots, founded by Kimball Musk and Tobias Peggs, wants to use shipping containers to create a food revolution. I don't mean the kind of container that the FedEx driver throws on your front porch. I'm talking about the kind of container that you hook to the back of a truck cab and drive around the country. Except, in this case, the 350-square-foot shipping containers will be retrofitted into hydroponic mini-farms in a box, so to speak. 10 companies have already signed on, and who knows how many more will join the parade. If you've ever sat at a railroad crossing and watched flatbed cars stacked with shipping containers go by, you know that there's no shortage of them in America. And if the name Kimball Musk rings a bell, yes, he's the brother of Elon Musk of Tesla fame. Some families have all the geniuses. According to Take Part, Musk predicts that the containers will be able to produce the equivalent yield of 2 acres worth of farmland annually with 80% less water than a conventional farm. And that seems to be where we're headed, with outfits like Aero Farms in Newark and Farmed Here, right here in Chicago, claiming that they can grow food without the muss and fuss of nasty old sunlight and overuse of our precious fresh water reserves. I hate to tell Joey and Holly Baird that they're using outdated technology. Shh. However, the jury is still out about whether these indoor operations are truly sustainable. Yes, outdoor irrigation can waste a lot of water if it is done improperly, but the indoor operations rely on LED technology and electricity-reliant cooling, which cuts down on efficiency. And note that most of the produce grown tends to be things like lettuce and kale, microgreens, and herbs. There are only so many greens that you can eat before you begin to crave a tomato or an avocado. Just saying. However, I recently interviewed Victor Zatteray from a company called Happy Leaf LED in Illinois, who claims that he has invented a better LED, one that is tuned to the optimal wavelengths that plants absorb most efficiently, which means, he says, that he can grow pretty much anything he wants, even tomatoes. So there. And the light is made in the USA. So double there. Which takes me to one final point, which is an article in The Guardian, which states, humanity's impact on the Earth is now so profound that a new geological epoch, or if you're British, epoch, the Anthropocene, needs to be declared, according to an official expert group who presented the recommendation to the International Geological Congress in Cape Town on Monday. I guess the point is that on this planet, we're usually on the verge of saving humanity or destroying it. Usually both at the same time. I wonder which side will win. That's my report for today. I hope you catch the Mike Novak Show on Q4, Q4.org, which you can always link to at my website, MikeNovak.net. Go green or go home.
We always appreciate that, Mike. Thank you very much. Now it's time for your questions and our answers. If you don't like our answers, well, you shouldn't have asked the question. So we got a couple of questions here. We got a few on garlic, one on slugs, and one on fermentation. Well, Holly, you're kind of in the fermentation world, so I'll let you answer the first one here. The question is, I'm interested in fermentation, obviously new at it. What would be the easiest way to get into it? What would you recommend me trying first when it comes to fermentation?
I got introduced to fermentation by making sauerkraut and pickles. I felt that was nice and easy. I followed just a simple brine for both. And sauerkraut, you don't really have a brine. You just finely chop the cabbage, and then you add the salt, and then you let it sit. But either of those, I would say, if you're not a fan of sauerkraut, then try the pickles. It's definitely something when you do home ferments, you want to check them every day, sometimes twice a day, especially if it's like 80 degrees out or 90 degrees out. You want to make sure you're checking those to make sure they're not molding or anything like that.
Do you want to keep them in a cool place? Is that the normal?
You want to keep them in a room temperature place away from direct sunlight.
So would it be better to have it in like an air-conditioned room or in a basement rather than just being like an open porch type of, you know, no climate control
like
type
a
of
kitchen.
Thing? Kitchen, okay.
But away from direct sunlight. So just make sure that you're following the directions. I would recommend, there's a lot of Facebook groups about fermentation, so you could find one of those. There's a lot of good books on home fermentation. You could even just kind of Google some of the information, but I would definitely start with either cucumber, pickles, or sauerkraut.
And is it then in the general rule, if it doesn't look right, doesn't smell right, don't eat it, throw it out, start over?
Right, and if it molds, you don't want to eat that either. Mold can develop spores and roots up to 5 inches deep. So if you're just fermenting like in a quart jar, that means there's mold throughout your...
And to prevent the mold, that's why you're wanting to stir that and
right.
keep that top layer turned under so the spores don't have an opportunity to begin to grow.
Yes.
Okay. All right, our next question, we have two of them in related to garlic. We do talks around the Wisconsin area, and right now we're going on the garlic talk because we're getting into later early fall, and that's when you plant garlic. If you have a garden club, center, library that you would have liked us to speak at, you can contact us under the speaking request on our website, as well as if you're outside of our region, we can do virtual garden talks via Skype, so that is always an option there. So when we go to garden talks, we like to inform the individuals who come learn from us, but also we learn from them.
Right.
And we learn a lot of stuff from them. It's not just we're the teachers, we know everything, sit down, shut up. We interact, we like to learn, we don't know everything, we never will. So we have two questions in regards to garlic. How do you grow single bulb garlic, which Holly and I have never heard of before?
Yeah.
What is this, when and how do you harvest that? Well, after doing some research, we did find single clove garlic. Now, what single clove garlic is, it's exactly as it is stated. It looks like a solid onion. There's no cloves. It's one bulb of complete garlic, which if you're able to find it, it makes dicing garlic incredibly easy. So Holly, you're gonna we found this on www.prettygarlic.com/produce/view.php?ID=1. You can just search single clove garlic and you'll be able to find this. But Holly, explain to us what single clove garlic is based on prettygarlic.com.
Sure. So single clove garlic is produced in the high mountain area of the Union Province. So apparently it's produced overseas, and it's usually a couple centimeters big.
So that's 1 or 2 inches, two to three inches based, I'm on the standard, so I don't know metric, so about two to three inches across is the size of it.
No, they'd be smaller. If it's a couple centimeters, then...
Okay, that's right, okay.
There's 10 centimeters and an inch or something like that.
Okay.
So it looks like...
Looks like a spring onion when peeled, okay.
It does have a high nutrition content, and it's so it must be pretty dense in nutrients, nutrient dense. And that's pretty much it. I mean, it looks like Joey said a spring onion.
From what we can find, it's it only happens that it gets harvested early spring in the United States. Oh, February harvest time is February to March every year. It's a purple and white in color. It has a great appearance. It is pricey because it's coming from, I guess that's a China location.
I don't know what it says. Yeah.
So it does exist. Some people are able to find this in their Chinatown or China markets. It's a very unique. It's a very unique. It's a part of southern part of China is where this is grown. It's a new thing to me. My preference is let's buy, grow, and supply garlic here in the United States. And as wonderful as some of these unique vegetables are, obviously it's not able to be grown here. Otherwise, we probably would have already seen it.
Right.
Unlike the Yaakon and the Jerusalem artichoke and the Akkas, we're learning how to grow them here. Maybe at some point we'll learn how to grow single clove garlic. So with that being said, the other question in regards to the garlic is process for curing black garlic, or process of curing garlic to obtain black garlic, temperature, humidity, time. Again, something that Holly and I had, now I had briefly, if I remember right, and sometimes a lot of things get blurred together, I had heard the term black garlic, and that was about as far as the term had gone. Well, there is black garlic, but it's not grown as a black garlic. Black garlic is a type of caramelization garlic, first used in ingredients in Asian dishes. It's made by heating the whole bulb of garlic over the course of several weeks and processes that results in black cloves. This is no form of fermentation whatsoever. It's basically...
They cook the crap out of it.
It looks like charcoal.
Yeah, it does look like charcoal.
But
I guess maybe the slow cooking must release some nutrients and flavor and whatnot. And just like when you slow cook, like when we slow cook meat, it helps.
It tenderizes it and it releases the juices.
So who is that for garlic?
Right. Now, Holly and I are not doctors or pharmaceuticalologists whatsoever. But there are apparently some beneficial properties in this black garlic, but that's something that you would have to do research on and check with your physician or doctor or whomever you seek medical advice from. But it is a unique thing. I'm sure it is, again, not the the cheapest way to do garlic.
I'm assuming it doesn't store any longer.
The seems like a lot of work. Yeah. When it comes to the garlic procedure, most of the magic happens behind closed doors of
patented machine.
An experiment technology, moderate heat, humidity for 3 weeks, regular sampling of the garlic for frequent quality assurance. So this is done kind of like in a factory, it almost looks like, when it comes to garlic. Black garlic is placed on a special rack for cooling over the course of 1 week. So it's processed for 3 weeks, cools for 1 week, and an expert samples the product. So somebody's getting paid big to do black garlic when you can just grow regular garlic and have some great benefits to it. Our final question, if you're interested in those two, that's something to look into. There's some knowledge there that we've obtained from guests that come to our garden talks. Our final question is, it's not really a question, it's a problem that we're having that we've never had before, and that is slugs in our front yard garden. And there could be many factors to the reason why we have slugs. But they're eating the tomatoes. They're eating everything. Slugs are not a pleasant pet to have. They're a nuisance in the garden. And there are several techniques in order to remove slugs or at least slow down their population. One being you can purchase slug pellets. Now, not all of the slug pellets are organic or safe or environmentally friendly. But as we are organic here at the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardens, sometimes when it comes to pest, rodent, or animal control, organic and nice is not always what you need to do. Sometimes the problem has to get to the point where you have to use means that are beyond what you would recommend, what you're comfortable using just to get rid of them.
So what are we going to do with our slugs?
Well, you can use the beer method, and that's simply you can take a tray, you can take a party cup, bury it where it is level with ground surface, fill it with your least favorite alcoholic beverage, or if your neighbor has bad beer, you can use that as well. What happens is the slugs are attracted to most beverages, most alcoholic beers, and they will dive into the cup or tray and drown.
Mm-hmm.
This does work. It gets very nasty, especially if you don't check your cups frequently. There also are slug traps and snail traps that will also kind of have the same effect on the slugs. You can also, what we have in the front yard garden is at the beginning of the season, we took about 3 inches of pine needles and covered the ground. Pine needles are not acidic at the time of breakdown process. They are acidic on the tree, but by the time they break down in your soil, they neutralize and they're not going to make your soil acidic. So we did do that in order to help retain moisture, which has worked.
Right.
But when you bring in a material such as pine needles, straw, dry grass clippings, leaves, the potential of housing or creating an environment to where insects can house underneath that material increases substantially. So that is something that we are looking at. Do we get rid of the pine needles at the end of the season or prior to planting next season? Just work them in the ground and just work with native soil or dry grass clippings that we've done this at the large garden, the dry grass clippings and the leaves, and have had no problem whatsoever with any type of insect. So that's something to look at. But if you have problems with slugs, there's several ways.
A lot of times, I think moisture has a...
True, absolutely. Slugs need moisture in order to survive because there's
slugs. We've had that rain.
We've had rain. And it's very enclosed because we've got a canopy of tomatoes over the area where the problem is most persistent. when it comes to the slugs. So those are some questions. If you have a question that you would like answered, feel free to send it to us via the website under the big red button that says question at the WisconsinVegetableGardener.com. You can also submit that question privately or publicly on our social media sites. Most popular is Facebook. Simply go to Facebook and type in the search window, the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener, and you'll see Holly and my face up there. And you can submit that privately or publicly. Yeah, in any form or fashion, we will answer you privately with the answer of a link or the knowledge that a link that was reliable and we trust, and or our personal experience and answer, as well as we will address it on the program here, but we'll leave out your name. Coming up after the break, he is the host of Growing a Greener World, one of the most popular garden programs PBS has ever had. Mr. Joe Lample will be with us right after this.
Looking for a fast-acting, non-toxic weed killer for your organic garden? One that works in cool and cloudy conditions as low as 40 degrees and is highly biodegradable with visible results in less than 2 hours? Then look no more. Avenger Weed Killer has it all and more. Made from oranges, Avenger is highly effective, easy to use, and has a pleasant citrus aroma. It is OMRI-listed and approved for organic gardeners under the USDA's National Organic Program. Avenger Weed Killer is a choice for organic gardeners and homeowners who are looking for an effective, safe way to control unwanted weeds. Available in ready-to-use sprays and concentrate, ask your local lawn and garden supplier for Avenger Weed Killer. For more information and a list of suppliers, visit AvengerOrganics.com. Avenger Weed Killer, eco-friendly, deadly to weeds.
It's all about the soil at ManureT.com. With their grass-fed, antibiotic, and growth hormone-free cattle and horses, owner Annie Haven puts the quality in her premium soil conditioner. 100% organic and natural, whether feeding your flowers or veggies, indoors or out, you can grow organically with confidence. To purchase authentic Haven brand manure tea, small orders or large, go to ManureT.com. Always free shipping.
If you could double the life of your raised bed boxes by sealing the wood with a non-toxic wood preservative, would you? Well, now you can with a clear, penetrating product called Internal Wood Stabilizer. It's 100% non-toxic and easy to apply. Seal your bare, untreated wood surfaces, even chicken coops, by spraying Internal Wood Stabilizer. It's invisible, seals the wood from the inside out, and never wears off. Recommended by organic gardening experts. Internal Wood Stabilizer. Check it out at TimberProCoatings.com.
Hey there, this is Hugh Richards from the YouTube channel Hugh's Nursery, which teaches you how you can grow organic vegetables cheaply and easily at home. You're currently listening to Joey and Holly Baird on the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Podcast.
Welcome back to the program. If you want to learn more about our sponsors, you can find them under the podcast tab on our website at thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com. Feel free to check them out and support them as they support us.
And those links are also in the show notes below. Well, let's go to the TWVG hotline and bring in our next guest. We're always excited when he joins us in the program. He is the host and co-executive producer of a multi-award-winning program on PBS entitled Growing a Greener World. You can find that on your local PBS station. Weekly, check your station for availability in your area. It also can be found on PBS's Create channel. Now, Joe also has all this information on the website, growinggreenerworld.com, concluding their sixth season of the program. We're always excited when he comes on the program. He's been a mentor to Holly and myself when we've had questions about organic gardening media productions. Welcome to the program, Mr. Joe Lample.
Thank you, Holly and Joey. It is always a pleasure to be with you guys. And I look forward to being on your show, too. So this is a little bit of mutual love fest here going on.
Well, that means a lot. we watch you on millions of people watch you on TV each and every week as you go into their living rooms and show them how we all can be better stewards of the earth by just doing simple little things. And we appreciate your time that you've taken to join us today on the program.
Well, thank you. It's a labor of love. Thank you.
So, Joe, we have listeners all over the world, which is exciting for us. And I think gardeners in general, we face one major problem, and that is our soil is not as enriched as it could be, whether it's container gardening, raised bed gardening, allotment, a community garden, or our traditional backyard gardens. What are some ways that us gardeners can help enrich that soil so our plants that we put in the ground
to grow can do the best potential growth that they can achieve?
You know, that is a great question, and the good news is it's not complicated, and it's pretty much the same answer no matter where you live, because you either have really heavy clay soil like we do here in Georgia, or you have really sandy soil like a lot of Floridians and other people have. And the beauty of this is if you can add organic matter to your soil, no matter what type you start with, you're going to improve it, and you're going to bring it closer to where it needs to be and give it the ideal environment that most plants would like to grow in. So if your soil is heavy, then it's going to loosen it up, and it's going to make it more conducive for the roots to spread out. And if it's sandy, you need to give it something in the soil that's going to allow it to retain more moisture and give it more bulk so the water just doesn't flow right through. And the way that you do that is compost. I mean, that's the number one answer. Compost is something that we all need more of. We can rarely make enough that we, you know, want to have. But compost is just really, you know, the decomposed organic matter of grass clippings and leaves and vegetable scraps from our house and cardboard paper towel rolls and shredded paper from our emails and homework that we don't need. You know, it's amazing how many things can be used to create compost. So that's one thing. The other thing is other things from outside in the yard, like shredded leaves. I already mentioned grass clippings, mulch that we should all be using more of. As it breaks down, it decomposes to improve the soil. So the moral of the story is, no matter what soil you have to begin with, what native soil you have to begin with, adding organic matter in the ways that I've described already will make your soil better and closer to where it needs to be to be considered what I would call ideal conditions.
Now, you speak of good compost. Now, we want to be aware of, if we're using grass clippings or even leaves, what may have been sprayed on those. You faced this problem a season or two back on the program. Yeah. Where you got a manure that you fed your horse that created the manure, that created the compost, which created basically poison compost. Talk a little bit about that. And it was really nice that you went through the steps on how to fix this problem and admitting that you did make a mistake, which you could have very well just said, hey, and not even shown it and just not even told anybody about it.
Well, and we actually had that conversation. We got to that point. And the backstory is that we have horses on our property, and so they eat a lot of hay. The hay we have to purchase. The hay comes from fields that are sprayed with what's called a persistent herbicide. And these days, there are persistent herbicides that are so persistent that they literally don't break down through the process of going through the horse in the front end, out the back end, and through the composting process, so that when you take that manure, which traditionally has been a great input for nutrients into your garden to improve the soil and fertilize it, well, now, with persistent herbicides, it's the herbicides are killing your plants. And it's not funny. I just laugh at myself because I actually did something that I know better to do. And because I was so anxious to add this composted manure to my garden beds, it's one of the inputs, I put it in there, and it had persistent herbicide because we were the victims of purchasing hay that had that in it from what the farmer gave. So, you know, we're filming a show, and I'm watching my plants shrivel up and die, basically, and we're like, my camera guy's saying, dude, we can't, I mean, you're Joe Gardner, you can't show this on TV. And I'm like, well, actually, we probably should show this, because if I can make this mistake, and I know better, how many people would make this mistake not knowing that this could happen and not knowing what caused the problem? So I'm fond of saying, as gardeners, you know, it's okay to make mistakes as long as you learn from your mistakes, and even better, if you share those mistakes and what you learn from those with others. And so that's what we decided to do. And through many emails and thank yous that I got from people that I potentially saved from doing the same mistake that I did, and showing them how to know ahead of time so they can avoid that mistake, we did a really good thing. So that's the story of what I call killer compost. And it's from persistent herbicides. So There's lots of information on my website at growingagreenerworld.com. If you put killer compost in there, you'll be able to read all about it and watch the episode that we did that on. So that's the story of that.
Okay. Now, a lot of gardeners, when they are trying to decide if they want to grow in the ground versus raised beds, it's kind of a toss-up for them a lot of the times. Why did you choose to go with the raised beds?
Well, that's another great question. I went with raised beds because I like raised beds. I like the look of them. And mainly, I like to be able to control or engineer the soil. So here in Georgia, we have really heavy, thick red clay. And I just got through saying that you can make that clay much better and really turn it into ideal growing conditions with the addition of organic matter. So that wasn't the main reason why I created raised beds. I like the look of raised beds. I am very particular about my soil. So if I can start from a frame and add to that the soil that I really want to make for my plants, and I have that opportunity, then gosh, I'm going to do that. So that was the main reason. But because it looks good when you have a lot of nice raised beds, and we invested, frankly, we made a big investment up front that should last a lifetime to create high-quality, large, non-treated wood raised beds. So controlling the soil, creating a deep bed so that the roots had plenty of room to grow was another issue. And then the third thing is, and this is just as valid of a point as anything else that I've told you, is that this garden space where it is over a septic drain field. So I wanted to make sure that the edibles that I was growing had plenty of distance between the bottom of the roots and wherever the drain field actually was, just for safety and health issues. So that's the other thing of it. But aside from that, given the choice, I would still do raised beds, but I wouldn't shy away from mounded beds in the ground. I think those are fantastic. But, I had the option to do either or. And for the reasons I've mentioned, I think I just, I like the idea of the raised beds. And I'm happy I did that. I really love them, and I love the fact they're 18 inches high and they provide a nice place to sit on the side of the beds. I enjoy that a lot when I'm taking a break. But I envision a day where I'll also expand my garden, and I will do it with mounded in-ground beds, too. So there's a good argument for both.
Now, you had a program, or you were hired for a program on the DIY Network many years ago, and then you finished your sixth season of Growing a Greener World. Where did the vision of Growing a Greener World come from? Was it an experience that you had on the DIY Network, or things that you saw that you didn't like that you said, hey, I want to do it, and I want to do it my way, the right way? Or how did that all come to be?
I could just say, yep, that's it, and leave it at that. But, Joey, that is another great question. The Fresh from the Garden show was really a fantastic concept. I loved the show. I loved hosting that show. It was all about teaching people how to grow food from seed to harvest. So every episode really tracked the growth of a particular type of plant, like a tomato, for example, from seed all the way through harvest. So when you watch the show, in one episode, you saw me plant the seed and actually harvest tomatoes from the plant that had matured to the point that it was producing fruit. And it was that way for 52 episodes. It was only going to be 26 episodes in 1 year, but it was going so well, it turned into 3 years and 52 episodes. And that was before even growing food became popular. And I really enjoyed being a host of that show, but I never wrote the show. I never had any real input in writing the show other than when they came to me and asked me questions or to clarify or solve a problem. And then the show I did after that, Garden Smart, I was just the host, and that producer wrote the show or the outline, and I was just really kind of hired to ask the questions. And so I thought, that's all well and good, but who is that really serving? That isn't embarking any really good workable gardening information. And so my idea with I really walked away from that show after 3 years. So that was my second national show. And I wanted to take a year off to create a show where I could do the writing as well as the production and the hosting, but one that really addressed helping people understand how to garden. Not so much, the how-tos, but the why-tos. In other words, why you need to do this and the reasons for that. Because I believe that if you understand why you need to do something, it's transferable to so many other things. And there weren't any shows out there that I had come across, and I watched them all, and I host several, that was addressing it that way. And the people that were writing the shows, although they had some working knowledge, they weren't really horticulturalists or avid gardeners. And I felt like there was a missed opportunity, because when I was hosting those other shows, I had other people telling me what to say and what not to say, and no one was really asking me what I thought. And I just felt like we were missing a huge opportunity to inspire people to garden and help them understand how to do it in a way that wasn't complicated, it wasn't intimidating, it was totally doable, and it didn't need to be as complicated as people thought. And so I wanted to teach people how to do that and approach it from an organic standpoint. And the only way that I could do that was to step away from being the hired gun or the talking head and do it my way. And it wasn't an ego thing at all. It was just, it wasn't out there, and it needed to be. And the only way that it was going to happen is if I stepped away and created it and hoped that enough stations picked it up and aired it. And thank God they did, and it, you know, we hit the ground running, and we haven't looked back.
Fantastic. So over all these seasons of Growing a Greener World, what is something you learned that just kind of blew your mind, you didn't expect to learn, and you're kind of glad that you did?
Oh, well, I think I am encouraged every day by the number of people that write us or email us or some way communicate with us that thank us for creating that show, which tells me that there's a huge thirst for this information, and they weren't being served that information or that help any other way. And that's exactly what I was hoping to do. I did want to create a show where I was hoping that people would see that and appreciate what we were trying to do, but I wasn't expecting for this many people to contact me out of the blue frequently to say, oh my God, you know, I just found your show. I love it. It's the best gardening show on TV. Thank you for creating this. I love your message. I love your approach. And, you know, that feels good. I mean, no doubt about it. That is the fuel that we need to keep our fire burning bright. I mean, we love what we do, so we're very energized by it anyway, and we run on adrenaline. But when we are giving legitimate, unsolicited fuel like that from our viewers, that's the best we can ask for. So there are a lot of enthusiastic people out there that we have interviewed and we've told stories on, and that's really exciting for us to come across those stories. And thank God there's a lot more we haven't told yet, which we are going to tell. We have a great backlog of episodes we're going to do. So there's really cool people out there doing really good things through gardening, and there's a lot of people that appreciate the stories that we're telling, and they tell us. And so I guess that's what I'm really maybe most happy about, is just to know that we are really serving an audience that feels like we're filling a void, and they need that information.
Well, Joe, you're a chicken guy, and before we let you go, I want to ask you this. We're getting towards the end of summer. What are some things that those of us who have chickens need to start preparing for, so our chickens, one, don't decrease in health, or don't really shut down on egg production as the fall and winter months begin to arrive?
Yeah. Well, I think certain chickens are more adaptable to certain areas of the country. I live in the Southeast, so, I mean, we get cold, but we don't get nearly as cold as you guys. And so we don't have as much of an issue with that, although I think it's important that you keep the cold wind off of your chickens. So in my case, for example, and I think this is applicable across the country, is to provide, like every year around, you know, September, October, I line our chicken coop with some thick plastic so that when the cold winds blow, they don't come into the coop and those chickens have a nice, dry, wind-free place to roost at night. I think that's the most important thing. As far as egg production, I think their natural cycles when it gets cold is they tend to shut down or slow down on their egg production. At least that's been my experience and of those of other people that I've consulted with. So it's natural there, and that's okay. They still produce. They just don't produce as much. But I think if you can keep the wind off your chickens and keep them dry in those colder times, it's amazing how resilient they are, as well as other animals. But, you know, we used to, in the earlier years, we used to keep the heat lamp in the coop and, you know, all of that. But as long as they can access water and they have the wind off of them and they're dry and you have a, you know, the breeds that are adapted to your area, you'd be amazed how undemanding they are beyond that. So just keep an eye on them. It's like gardening. You know, you just need to pay attention to what you're in charge of taking care of. And if you provide the basic necessities, you know, Mother Nature has got this figured out. They, you know, we try to overcomplicate it. We try to engage sometimes more than we need to. And sometimes we make it worse by, you know, loving our plants to death or being, you know, more involved than we need to be. I do agree we need to exercise a level of stewardship, but we also need to understand that we don't need to solve the world's problems. We're just caretakers, and we're, you know, they don't necessarily depend on us for their survival necessarily.
Absolutely. Well, Joe, we greatly appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to join us. For people who want to check out all of those six seasons of Growing a Greener World and to find more information out about you, your team, and the awards that you've won, where's the best place that they can go to find that?
GrowingAGreenerWorld.com. Very simple.
And that link will be in the show notes below. Joe, thank you very much for being with us today.
Joey and Holly, thank you. It's always a pleasure, and I appreciate it very much.
And we'll be right back after this.
A gardener knows that the key to a good plant is its roots. With poor roots, the end result is not good. Conventional pots and trays cause roots to wrap around and become root-bound. Then you try to unwrap the roots at the time of planting, hoping not to break them. But never again with the Root Maker, a non-chemical innovation that naturally air prunes roots to create more vigorous roots. Never a root-bound plant again. Whether trees, flowers, or edibles, home gardener, commercial grower, more roots means healthier, more productive plants. To get your own, visit rootmaker.com.
Oh yeah, what you say? You say Nasala Kombucha. It'll put some glide in your stride and some pep in your step. Nasala Kombucha. Yeah.
Nasala Kombucha makes your body happy. Nasala Kombucha makes your body smile.
At DollarSeed.com, all of our seeds are only a dollar a pack. And we have online resources that teach you all about the rewarding hobby of growing your own plants, flowers, herbs, and vegetables. Imagine the joy you'll feel when your children actually help you harvest your first garden crop. Or the pride of knowing you'll never need a florist again. Visit DollarSeed.com and grow a little magic of your own for just a dollar. DollarSeed.com. What could be healthier?
Hi, this is Chris Van Cleve, host of the Rose Chat Podcast. You can hear us at rosechatpodcast.com. But right now, we're going to talk vegetables, and you're listening to Joy and Holly Baird on the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Podcast.
Welcome back to the program. If you want to check out those sponsors, you can visit our podcast tab on our website at thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com. Feel free to support them as they support us.
Well, we appreciate Joe taking time out of his obviously very busy schedule to join us on the program. Just an incredible individual that's very knowledgeable about gardening. Well, before we get out of here, we have one more task to accomplish, and that is Gardening in 2 Minutes. Gardening in 2 Minutes is an audio production that Holly and I produce on a weekly basis for a couple of radio programs and a handful of podcasts. Mm-hmm. If you would like Gardening in 2 Minutes on your particular program, contact us through the website. This Gardening in 2 Minutes is all about seed saving 101. And here is Gardening in 2 Minutes. This is Gardening in 2 Minutes. As fall is sadly approaching, now's the time that we need to be saving seeds from the favorite plants that we are growing so we can regrow them again next year, as well as go through our seed box and throw out those seeds that are old and, quite frankly, will not germinate very well when we try to grow them next year.
Saving seeds is important because you can get them acclimated to your where you are, but they do lose germination year after year, especially when they're not stored properly. If they're stored away from direct sunlight, in a dry area, they have more of a chance for better germination year after year as opposed to stored in direct sunlight where they could get moist.
Tomatoes seeds, if stored correctly, can last up to 10 years. On the other hand, leeks and onions, 2 years is the max, preferably 1 year. And they say parsnips are only good for 1 year as well. We've saved parsnips, and they grew 4 years after they were saved and done very, very well. So it's based on experiment in your particular growing area and how safely and correctly you've saved the seeds.
You can store your seeds in separate little baggies and put them in a mason jar or another container and put it in the crisper part of your fridge. That will provide the proper coolness and the proper darkness and the depth that you need for that. You can even put them under your bed, under a couch, in a pantry, just as long as it's cool, good air circulation, and dark. You also want to look at when you found your seeds, the label, the dates, when you have them, because we have seeds from 2010 that we're not even going to attempt to grow because we know that they will not germinate.
For more information on seed storing, proper seed saving, as well as our weekly video productions and our free downloadable digital quarterly magazines, you can find all that information at
thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com.
A gardener for all gardener. For gardening in 2 minutes, I'm Joy Baird.
I'm Holly Baird.
So there you go. You don't always have to buy the seeds. You can save those which you want to carry on the traits of your particular growing area or specific variety that you want to keep for many years to come. Well, with that being said, we appreciate you tuning in, downloading, listen to the program online, visiting our website, thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com. We're always happy to answer any question you may have in regards to gardening, or in Holly's case, canning, to help you better preserve the food, grow the food that you eat, and preserve the food so you have it all year long. The audio you've heard on the program is courtesy of sfx.co.uk and audioneutronics.com, two royalty-free and copyright-free websites we use to help liven up the podcast.
Except for the ones from Dollar Seed and Nasala Kombucha, they provide their own.
So until next time, I'm Joy Baird.
I'm Holly Baird.
And we will see you in the garden. The Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Podcast is a production of thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com for the health-conscious organic gardener worldwide and distributed in association with WI Garden Media.